This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. With the presidential election more than 2 months away, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are traveling the country to make their cases for why they should lead the country. And political analysts are turning their attention to how voters are responding. In North Carolina, 3.5 million women are registered to vote, outnumbering registered male voters by more than 500,000. With a female candidate at the top of the ballot, both parties understand the importance of wooing the female vote in 2016. NPR political correspondent Don Gagne is in the Triangle this week reporting on women voters and joins us now. Don Gagne, a friend and former colleague, and what a pleasure to finally actually talk to you on the radio. I've never done that before.
This is such a treat. I'm so glad I could find the moment in this schedule where I'm running all over the place trying to find people to talk to.
Well, not just all over the place. Yeah. Good to have you here, but not just all over the place, but North Carolina, of course, a very important state in this cycle.
Oh, absolutely. And not just because of its 15 electoral votes. It is one of those battleground states. It is one of those states that will decide the election.
Female, the women's vote, that's what you're focusing on. That's this particular assignment. Why that?
It's not just the women's vote. It is women with a college degree or more. So it's the educated women's vote. That is a slice of the electoral pie that Republicans have always been able to count on. Mitt Romney, John McCain, George W. Bush, go back. It's just been one of those givens in American presidential politics that these are the kind of voters that Republicans do very well with.
And there are no givens in this race, right?
There are no givens because the rest of that sentence is until Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. There is that Never Trump movement out there, so that's part of it. But a lot of it is his tone, the way he talks about the issues, the way he talks about his opponents, the way he approaches the whole process is a turnoff for a lot of these educated women voters. And that's what I've been finding as I've been talking to people here. It's not that I don't find Trump supporters, but it's all a matter of degrees and margins, right? And it is a real potential trouble spot if Donald Trump is going to be president.
Well, so tell us what you found so far, because I think there are at least three cases that illustrate the scope of thinking on this issue.
Right. So last night, it's one of those nights where you just kind of, you know, you start pulling threads and seeing who'll call you back and seeing who you can talk to. And I had three women who all self-identified as conservatives, all conservatives. But here's how they broke down. One of them, a Ted Cruz delegate. We met at the Crabtree Mall. She is a Donald Trump supporter. Because the option is Hillary Clinton. For her, it's an easy choice. She did not like Trump during the primaries, but if the option is Hillary Clinton, she is a Trump supporter. I said, what about Trump's tone? Because a lot of the women voters I talk to cite that. They'll call him misogynistic or other things. And she says, he's from New York. He's from Long Island. That's how they talk. She says, I'm not from New York, but I go to New York. I love New Yorkers. I love that they talk like this. I love that they're kind of in your face and say what they mean. And that's all Donald Trump is. So she absolutely lets him off the hook for all of that because she thinks that's just the way a New Yorker runs for president.
Who else did you talk to?
Okay, so I talked to a woman who is a former Marine. And we were in one of those pretty new subdivisions, kind of tucked into a wooded area with lots of new houses in North Raleigh. It didn't feel like we were in Raleigh anymore. So we were like way up there, right? And she's an ex-Marine. Her husband is an ex-Marine. They both worked in military defense and military intelligence. And she said she has proudly been voting for Republicans her entire adult life. Her family is Republicans. They believe Republicans are in the right place on national security and those national defense issues. And she's 32 years old. They have three kids and another on the way in early October. And as we sat on her back porch and talked, she told me she cannot vote for Donald Trump. And it's because of those national security issues. She doesn't feel like he is a serious candidate. She doesn't feel like He has taken the time, not just to study the issues, but to even begin to appreciate the complexity of the issues. So I said, so how about Hillary Clinton? And she shook her head and she says, I cannot vote for Hillary Clinton. She thinks Hillary Clinton is corrupt. As someone who has worked in intelligence, she is appalled at the email server and some of the things that she sees that have happened there and the secrecy there. She too is offended by the lack of security at Benghazi and thinks that Secretary Clinton's behavior both during that tragic episode and since is disqualifying. So she is leaning toward Gary Johnson, the Libertarian candidate. And she says he's not going to win. And she said, if I look at a lot of what's in his platform, I probably disagree with a lot of it, but I can't not vote. And it's a vote that allows me to lay my head on my pillow at night for the next 4 years. So that's a former Marine.
Right.
So the third one is an eighth grade school teacher at a school in Raleigh. And she is 51 or 52 in that range. I don't know my notes in front of me right now. But she said she registered as a Republican when she was 18. And that first election that she got to vote in was Ronald Reagan's reelection in 1984. She proudly voted for Reagan. She has proudly voted for every Republican since. She sees herself, she self-identifies as a conservative, as all of these women do. She self-identifies as a conservative, but she thinks the party has moved to the right. So here's what's interesting. She said she wanted to keep an open mind. She watched both conventions in their entirety. And she said she did not see anything at the Republican convention that made her feel good about self-identifying as a Republican. She watched the Democratic convention, and she said she saw Hillary Clinton with new eyes. She took the filter off because she was just trying to really analyze it. And she said, it's not that she likes Hillary Clinton now, but she didn't dislike what she saw as much as she thought she was going. It's like she felt like she was giving her a fair shake, and she said to herself, there's a lot I disagree with her on. But there are things that I agree with her on that I didn't know, and she's going to support her.
Wow.
And she's changed her affiliation from Republican, which it has been forever, to unaffiliated.
Don't hate her as much might be the theme of this entire election. Don't hate him as much. This is the most topsy-turvy election you have certainly in my lifetime, and I'm guessing yours, Don. And you've been covering politics for a long time. Mm-hmm. How do you encapsulate? I mean, how do you try to, you know, is there a story you can tell? Is there a way in which you can try to understand or frame the wackiness that is this election?
You know, you recognize that this is a very unusual place that we are in, and it's mostly because of Trump. It is. He is just, we have never seen a candidate like that. And we have never seen, in fact, we couldn't have imagined, and maybe that's a lack of imagination on our part, right? But at the start of this, we couldn't have imagined that someone with his manner, his demeanor, his bluntness, his sometimes vulgarity could take over the Republican Party as he has. But in retrospect, maybe we should have seen it coming. You know, maybe the Tea Party gave us the hints that this kind of discontent was roiling over. And even if it felt like the Tea Party had maybe reached a plateau, the sentiment hadn't gone away. Mm. But still, watching him, the controversies or would-be controversies that keep piling up, they pile up and then they're gone so quickly because they've been replaced by another one.
I'm laughing, but really I'm crying on the
inside. And then on the other side, we have Hillary Clinton, who, you know, whether you support her or don't, whether you like her or dislike her, the polls show her to be, you know, other than Donald Trump, the least popular major party nominee ever. And a lot of that's because of, the battle she's engaged in as a member of, you know, the Clinton family, or call it the Clinton dynasty, or call it whatever you would like. But that has certainly, you know, taken a toll on how people viewer.
How do you do it now in this? Do you approach things differently?
You know, you always kind of report on the scene in and around. But this year, that scene has gone places that I hadn't seen before. And there is kind of that moment where you go, that happened, but, you know, I'll figure out a way to talk about it without that is okay on the radio. But at some point, you realize you just kind of have to go there.
Yeah.
And I did one piece this year that had, you know, a half a dozen or more. And I don't remember the tally bleeps in it.
Yeah.
Just because I decided... I'm going to put it all out there.
That's how frustrated you were.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that wasn't you. That's right.
And then with Secretary Clinton, you know, there is less access for the reporters who are following her. You know, I know they hold up the tally that they've done 300 interviews and this and that. So yes, she is doing interviews. But she's not taking questions from the people who know her best and who know her policies best on a regular basis. And there is less access for the traveling press corps than there was when I was in the, you know, Obama bubble in 2008. And even, you know, chasing George W. Bush around.
Great stuff, Don. A little bit behind the scenes and kind of a preview of some of the reporting. My good friend and former colleague, Don Gagne. So good to have you. Thank you so much for talking with us.
It's a pleasure. I'll probably be back.
National political correspondent for NPR. Just ahead, a new art exhibit at the Nasher explores contemporary Southern culture. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay tuned.